Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, sir. I got to ask, though, that show that we just broke into, I wasn't in the studio for that. That was that Ice Supreme thing. Whatever happened with that? Did they make a go of it?
Ice Supreme, still going strong. They are, instead of milk, they use almonds.
How cool is that? So can you get them
at the base? It's at Whole Foods.
Yeah, where all the hippies shop, right? No, I love Whole Foods. You know what I like about Whole Foods? The avocados, you can go home and eat them right then. You don't have to put them in the paper bag for 3 days. These are little tips you get if you're listening on Atlanta Business Radio.
Eat local. Eat local.
Well, no, we mentioned this in the last broadcast earlier, late this morning, but man, did I have a good time Friday night. Went to that private viewing of the Shark Tank. And saw Damon John. I bet some of the folks in our studio will recognize that name. That was a lot of fun, and you got to peek behind the curtain a little bit and really get some insight into what happens behind the scenes. There, that was a lot of fun.
That Shark Tank show. You think some of these startup people we have today will follow that show a little bit?
I think maybe. And that Damon John, he's such a gracious guy, sharp as a tack, and it was really interesting to peek into the way he thinks. And so I don't know, maybe some of that conversation will come out in today's show.
Yeah, good stuff. So who do we have?
Well, this is going to be a great segment. A little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from Jared and TJ with We & Co. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Director of Content Strategy for Nebo, Mr. Kevin Howarth. Welcome to the show, man.
All right, great to be here.
We're delighted to have you, but I'm a little jealous of that radio voice.
Oh, man, that is a killer voice. That is just A+.
So give us a little bit of a feel for Nebo. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Yeah. Nebo is an interactive marketing agency that has been around for about 8 years. They're founded in 2004. The focus primarily is interactive marketing. And we tend to call ourselves a human-centered interactive marketing agency, which on the surface, you know, human-centered, what does that even mean?
You know, it has a nice little ring to it, I think.
Yeah, that's good.
That sounds cool.
It's a marketing thing.
Yeah, I'll go with it.
As opposed to non-humans. You know?
Right.
But basically, if we kind of unpack that term, it really just means like looking at how web design and development and also search marketing can be thought of in a way that basically looks at how those marketing initiatives affect the behavior of people interacting with either a website or how they're finding your website through search terms or paid advertising and things like that. You know, as an example of that, you know, a lot of traditional user experience when you're on a website and you're figuring out how a user gets through and navigates through the website, traditional user experience does a lot of great things, but it tends to focus a lot on tactics and mechanics. You know, here's the existing website as it is. How do you get from point A to B? Okay, they did these series of steps, so maybe we can maximize and tweak whatever they did. Versus the idea of how do you look at user experience differently in terms of how it can maybe change the behavior and the perceptions of people or the perception of the brand as you come to a website. In other words, how can you help shape the behavior of somebody who's actually coming and experiencing your brand on a website?
Now, can you explain that in terms of how that actually happened instead of theoretically, but like maybe a real client example of that? I mean, you don't have to name the name of the client, but maybe tell us the before and then what you did as the after to affect the change.
Yeah, I think a great example of this is we work with a client who had a very innovative kind of drainage pipe that was that's very flexible. So in other words, instead of just putting your normal kind of drainage pipe, you actually have this very flexible drainage pipe that saves time and it's just a lot easier to use. But in that case, we were dealing with a very traditional conservative market of do-it-yourselfers and contractors who don't really like to change a lot of how they do things. So when we redesigned the website, we made the experience of the site more engaging. In other words, there were some videos and some even some like challenges about, okay, here's the flexible drainage pipe versus the old way. And there was like a 5-minute video that sort of made it really fun, but it showed two teams going at it.
That's cool.
And it really kind of engaged that particular audience to make it fun for those contractors and those do-it-yourselfers to watch. And by experiencing that differently, instead of a boring old website that just, here's the specs on these pipes and blah, 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 it was a different experience because they actually got to see it in action in a way that appealed to them, and it changed the perception of, oh, okay, this maybe is something I should consider because, look, these are my peers going at it in a fun way to try to, you know, basically you know, save time and money, but also, you know, doing this
it's
kind
like
of
a
new
puzzle,
innovative way.
Right. So like they were, they saw somebody solve a puzzle maybe in a way that they weren't familiar with solving in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be an example of just how a website redesign can change the way that people actually perceive a brand on a
now,
a
did website. That actually increase their sales? Do you track it like that, or what, how do you define winning?
Yeah, winning would involve, you know, especially in an industry like theirs, is conversions, you know, whatever they would define as a conversion. So in that case, their ROI could be tracked by the amount of people who are, you know, interested in buying the products, the amount of people who are driven to retailers to buy the products. And so when complemented with search marketing, you know, such as, you know, search engine optimization and pay-per-click advertising, we can measure pretty accurately how that website redesign actually rose the number of conversions. And that site, for example, has actually won a few awards for doing that. So,
and so it really does move the needle.
Yeah.
Changing the web experience really does move the needle for a company like
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah. But that kind of thinking needs to be behind it in order to really, I think, you know, move the needle drastically for the long term.
Right. And so what exactly does a director of content strategy do Monday
That's
through
a lot
Friday?
Of thinking, right?
Sometimes I don't know myself. Basically, content strategy is interesting because it's really a new term that gets tossed around, but it's really old skill sets just repackaged in a new context. You know, to me, I'm not doing anything differently with content strategy than I did when I was editing TechLinks magazine back in the day. Media skill sets are very, very transferable to what is known as now as content strategy. Content strategy, really what I do is both for Nebo and for clients is to sort of say, okay, let's look at first your business objectives and any maybe search marketing objectives that you have, and then look at how you need to engage an audience with content that they need, which means that you have to really identify your target audience. Develop content that they need to help them in any part of either the buying cycle or even with in terms of just brand recognition. So a lot of times, you know, I could be developing content that's just sort of like, you know, for general brand awareness for a client, you know, just to let people know that, okay, this company, I don't know, does a lot with, let's say, like plumbing fittings or something like that. We just need to kind of splash that around with maybe some video content or some white papers about what they do.
It's amazing to me that you can focus on something that on the surface seems so mundane, and it sounds like you can really bring it to life.
Yeah, and I think, too, the challenge, and I'll give you another example of that. I'm working with a client right now that does fax server software. And when I was even assigned this, it was like, okay, you kind of have an IT background, so maybe you just take the most boring client that we have. I don't know. Once I started to dig into it, the challenge of something like content strategy, just like with marketing, is that you have to find what's interesting within it. So recently, I'm just wrapped up an article that we're going to be starting to pitch to some publications about that. But the idea was that to find something that was of interest to it. And in this case, it had to do with like HIPAA compliance.
Right.
So that was, in other words, if you're doing manual faxing, you are highly at risk for violating a bunch of HIPAA violations.
Sure.
So something like that kind of, you know, made it really interesting and sort of tied it back together to what their core products were. So the key with content there is to really look at like what's engaging or interesting a particular audience.
Right.
And then what content can either help them maybe along a purchasing decision or just in general brand awareness about certain elements of the products or services that companies provide.
Now this sounds like a kind of a blending of advertising, PR. Is this kind of a gray area now? Has social media kind of evolved to this point where they're all kind of becoming all meshed together?
It's kind of a Wild West territory right now because it blends so many different things. I mean, in any given portion of what I do with content strategy, I have to understand business objectives of a company. I have to understand what the search marketing objectives are. I have to look at public relations objectives, and it does tie into social media along with traditional media. It's a weird blend, and each client can be very, very different. You know,
right.
one client, we could be worried about YouTube optimization. Another client, it's traditional article pitching. You never know. But that's why it's important to you. You'll hear a lot about content strategy out there, and a lot of, you know, quick, like, here's 9 things to do with content strategy. It really depends. You have to understand the client and know exactly what they need in particular, because if you try to just do a cookie cutter content strategy for clients,
it's impossible, right?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's really not a good way to go.
Now, like when you're building this, when you're getting ready to do one of these integrated campaigns, do you have to know as the content strategist, like you have like, okay, these are the keywords I got to use, and that, like,
yeah,
you got to keep all these things in like in front of you, so you sprinkle in the right keywords, you use the right PR objectives, you got to kind of keep that all top of mind and then give them a piece that at least addresses all those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, part of the process that I always go through, and this might be a good takeaway even for audience to kind of think through, is when you're doing something like this, it helps to have first the business objectives, the search marketing objectives, which involves all the the keyword strategy, any sort of even paid search strategy, because sometimes if you're driving people to landing pages, that landing page needs to have really good content. So public relations objectives. And then usually what I try to do is make sure that it's tied in with whatever teams you're working with internally to make sure that you're not stepping on anyone's toes and you're working together in harmony. And also with the client. The client may, and the things too, I always check anything that I'm thinking with the client because the client may have a PR history. They might have media relationships existing. They might have done nothing. You never know. So sometimes we do a lot of legwork, but then when we get to the client, sometimes we find out some other interesting nuances that kind of turn it into something, and that all kind of rolls together into one overarching content strategy.
And then it all has to be done by later today. Right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yesterday or 2 days ago.
So if a client listens to something like this, or if a company listens to something like this, they get very inspired by it. They try to go down this path, either by themselves or with, say, a traditional PR firm that just doesn't have this expertise. What are some of the traps they can fall into?
Well, I think one that's real almost overly obvious but doesn't get addressed is really audience definition. You really have to understand who your target audience is for any content strategy almost before anything else. A lot of people want to jump to, okay, let's just develop some content right now. Or let's just write up an article. We know that we do, fax servers. Let's just start writing about fax servers. But when you start to define your audience, and again, I'll take the fax server, as an example again, they have three distinct audiences, that we were kind of looking at, for example, like healthcare, IVRs, and small and medium businesses. So basically, when you have, and those are three very different audiences.
Right. You can't have one thing that addresses all three of those. That'd be...
Yeah.
Is that what they normally do? I guess that would be a common mistake.
Yeah, a lot of companies, and not in this particular case, but that's a good example of, like, let's say a company, had those three audiences. They would just write more about, and this is very common for companies, they'll just write about their own products and services. A lot of companies are very, they're inwardly focused. They're very, they don't know any better than to sometimes say, well, let's just take what's in our product brochures or what we take to trade shows and just write more about our products. When you start to think about the audience, you have to really then start to think, what do they want to read about? And again, in the case of the fax server, again, with the healthcare audience, they don't want to read about, oh, there's these 8 features on this fax server. Aren't they awesome?
Right.
They don't want to see that. I mean, it's that kind of selling is over. What they want is they're struggling with certain issues. So in this case, like, HIPAA is always breathing down their neck. So it's like, okay, let's put two and two together. How does this product work to alleviate the HIPAA pain? And then when you bring that together, the article suddenly becomes about HIPAA, but it's a soft sell toward the products and services. And they say, wow, that's a really informative article. Who wrote that or who sponsored that?
Right.
Oh, it's this company that seems to know what they're talking about. And that's where you start to build the links between content strategy, marketing, and actually sales and business development for these companies.
Do you have to kind of coach up the client to understand that, so they don't get mad, like, hey, you barely mentioned my product. This was all about HIPAA. What are you doing? You work for me, not HIPAA.
Well, that's actually one of my favorite educational points for clients because I can take them back and say, I think a lot of companies often don't realize because they're so insular and they spend all day looking at themselves most of the time that they don't realize how much certain things they want to say about their products are really noise. I spent 5 years as a magazine editor of TechLinks, and I saw so much noise over those 5 years of all these companies saying the same thing all the time, and it just came in waves. I mean, press releases. So what I often tell them is, like, this is the noise that might media hear. And I keep in touch with a lot of media people, so I often reference other people. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day who's in the media. He gets 200 press releases a day. He was showing me them on his mobile phone. So what I try to do is say, okay, you got to make connections, and to just self-servingly talk about your products and services isn't going to cut it anymore. And people, the way the web has evolved, people are very thirsty for content now, and content actually helps them make purchasing decisions any way along the buyer's journey, from I'm doing some initial research to I'm ready to buy. But content helps drive that now,
right,
more than it ever has. So that's why it's really important to look at it and say, what's useful for the audience versus what do I feel is important about my product or service?
Now, you've been with Nebo from the very start?
No, I've actually been with Nebo since July.
Since July?
Yeah.
Oh,
but
wow.
But my background, I've actually known Brian Easter and Adam Harrell. They're the two founders of Nebo. I've known them since the inception of Nebo. They were actually sponsors of TechLinks back in the day, and they've always impressed me. I mean, I've seen them kind of grow from 2 people to 38 people over the years. It's been an amazing story to see them. And we got, we just sort of started talking in 2011 a little bit, and because of my media background with TechLinks and some of my business development background with Sophisticity, it kind of blended together nicely.
I think it was the voice. I'll be honest with you. I think it was the voice.
And I charmed them with the voice. That was the... That was the ultimate.
So was that a hard decision for you to go to the dark side, to, you know, away from journalism to, you know, more advertising?
I think partly I'm always interested in expansion of skill sets. So
is that how we're going to spin it? That was the rationalization that we had?
It all made sense in the end. It was all part of a destiny.
And so I've heard you describe Atlanta as a real marketing and technology hub. You obviously believe that. Speak to that a little bit. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, and this is something, too. I think since coming down here in 2003, and especially with spending a lot of the time with TechLinks for so many years covering the Georgia technology industry, and I've seen Technology Association of Georgia grow over the years, and I've seen this entire ecosystem grow. And a lot of times, people sometimes wonder how much of it is hype and how much of it is reality. I think TAG put out a report recently where, they sort of looked at the tech industry having like a $113 billion economic impact. I think the important thing is that I've seen, especially I came in to Atlanta in a recession, and I've seen it go through another horrible recession over the past few years. But I know a lot of technology and especially interactive marketing folks, and those industries tend to be, I won't say recession-proof, but they rebound from the recession much better than other industries. So I've seen a lot of like technology industry jobs and marketing jobs kind of continually to help booster up the economy at a time where it was kind of really, I think, hard hit. If you look at the entire ecosystem too, it's like you have a lot of a lot of different things that kind of connect to each other. Like, for example, there's a lot of Fortune 500 companies that are heavy into technology and marketing. You have a lot of businesses that focus on this. You have a startup community, which, by the way, has gotten a lot better over the years. When I first got here, there would be a lot of complaints about how, there were a lot of things that it needed. And I've seen a lot of people over the years really put some effort into helping that grow. And, of course, the university system, too. And I think I've seen, a lot of interaction between all those elements. And it keeps... getting better and better each year. It seems like there's more connections between all the different pieces there, and also too, I think in terms of like just building up, I guess what you call knowledge-based businesses. I've sort of seen that there's a lot of technology clusters and a lot of interactive marketing clusters that have really worked to where you'll have let's say serial entrepreneurs that were successful the first time around start to build new businesses and start to help other new startups do their thing. And I've seen this ecosystem grow over time. So are there still some things to work on? Of course, there's still hear some people kind of yammer about venture capital and education and especially like K-12 education, things like that. Some people sort of claim that Atlanta's still very B2B focused. There's not like a big B2C play here, but overall, I think just over the years, when you've seen like certain technology clusters like information security, logistics, and these other things kind of grow, and then interactive marketing has really gotten hotter and hotter in Atlanta over the last like 10 years, especially, and you just see more and more companies, even in spaces that Atlanta wasn't known for. I mean, 5 years ago, you would have laughed to say that there was Atlanta had a social play. And now there's actually some companies that are coming up that are either from some of these serial entrepreneurs or some new companies that are really doing some really interesting things. I mean, so I think things, I keep seeing more better signs over time that that both the technology and the marketing sides of things have kind of really blown up quite a bit over the past especially 5 to 7 years.
So how is Nebo going to market, other than, I'm sure you've got to have a kick butt interactive marketing type website, but how are you going to market? How are you meeting the people that you need and want to meet?
Yeah, a lot of times, and we're staunch too, we don't want to be salesy. We're never salesy in what we do. So a lot of what we do is using our own magic on ourselves. So a lot of times, it would be sort of like, I guess, three different points of view on this. One is just simply, you know, obviously, you know, referrals. We do such great work for clients that we just get more business either through them or through people that they know. So we've grown very organically in that sense. But when we kind of get out there and market our services, a lot of times we use our own web design magic on ourselves. You know, we make sure that our website is informative from a content perspective.
So you don't use billboards?
Not a whole lot.
Maybe the blimp.
How about those
Sky
tiny
Riders?
Ads like the guy teaches you at 3 o'clock in the morning? Oh, I just run lots of tiny little ads.
It's all classified ads.
Right.
So we really build our website for it to be a real resource for anybody coming in at any point in the buying cycle, whether they're just browsing to figure out more about web design development or whether they're ready to buy, whether they're doing the research, whether they're ready to make a decision. And same thing with search engine marketing. We do a lot of just long-term SEO, but also very, very kind of short-term paid search that kind of helps let people know relevantly what we do when they're looking for it. So. And then finally, too, I would say that we do a lot of community activity, too. I mean, we're very heavily involved in, you know, Technology Association of Georgia, Atlanta Interactive Marketing Association, AMA. We've done things, helping charities like Paws Atlanta. Last year we did a digital dog adoption drive where we kind of drove, the awareness about dog adoption. So we do a lot of things in the community, too, that kind of get us out there and also kind of show that we're invested in the community, not only as a business, but as somebody that wants to also
give
back,
too. Right,
you're
a part of the community.
Yeah, so I think when you combine that, too, a lot of people tend to know who we are, what we do. You know, we've won lots of awards, so that helps. And so we're just kind of a presence out there now, and we just kind of keep engaging with our target markets more and more as time goes on.
Well, and now you've been on Atlanta Business Radio, so it's Katie Bar the door from here on out, I would think.
With the voice, too. So I think the voice will help us.
Absolutely. Now, you and Lee have a connection that I'm not sure either of you recognize that I have just recently become aware of. So, Lee, I might have you asking the question, or you even know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking
about.
You
are both alumni of this comedy class with this Jeff Justice guy. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Sort of strange how we met Jeff Justice. I actually, when I first got down here, I took a Tai Chi course for about a year. And that's about as long as it lasted. But there was a strange guy named Jeff who was in the course. And when I started talking to him one day, he said, I do stand-up comedy. I was like, oh, really? Then I saw him around the industry a little bit. He actually knew Mike Atkinson back at TechLynx, and there was like that connection there too. It's like, okay, small world. And so finally I took the stand-up course, and it was an amazing experience. It was something I always kind of wanted to do. And once I got up there, it was like one of the most fascinating experiences. We did, it was 6 weeks. We just worked on, one joke, then two jokes, then four jokes. Then we built our little routine. And I got up there for about maybe like, 10 minutes or so. It was a fantastic experience. It was like, to see like the punchline with 281 people, I think it was like sold out that night. And just, all the students got up there. And it was just an incredible experience in terms of like, just like confidence building. And just, if you can make a room laugh.
Right.
That's a pretty powerful thing, So it was a very, and Jeff does a great job with the course too. He makes it very much, bite size.
Sure.
He's a little ambitious, but it's a great, I think for anyone who wants to, really get their confidence skills up or their, speaking skills up. It's a great alternative course for something, versus something like Toastmasters. Nothing against Toastmasters, but it's a unique way to learn some of those skills. So
now when I took the course, we started at 20 people. Did you start at 20 as well? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think there was, it was a pretty full course. I think we had 21, dropped down to like 17 or something like that.
So you finished with 17?
Yeah.
We finished at 13. We had like seven people drop out.
Man.
And we had some people drop out. Yeah. You know how you do the dress rehearsal the day before?
Yeah.
We had people drop out the day before.
All the way through to dress rehearsal.
They do the dress rehearsal and didn't show up for the performance.
That's funny. Yeah, because the amazing thing that about that was I became bored with my routine by the time I was going to do it, because he literally said do it 40 to 50 times,
right.
And he wasn't kidding. It's like a lot of people didn't spend the time, I don't think, just kind of memorizing and mastering that. But
right.
But yeah, Jeff just had it all down, and just, he made it a really fun experience.
Right. It was a great experience.
But you both feel like it's helped you in your professional life, yeah, with the confidence and being more articulate and quicker on your feet, that kind of thing?
Well, it's interesting, too. I actually present better now, and I used to do presentations in very rigid ways. I'd be worried more about the content, like, oh, no, I got to make sure I cover point one, then point two, then point three. And now I make sure that, am I getting somebody laughing early on? Are we feeling loosened up? Are we feeling laid back? Is the pace right? And just little things like that. It's almost like a second level of presentation skills where you start to worry more about, are you making people feel comfortable versus, oh, do I have my homework done right?
Right. And I learned the most. I thought my biggest takeaway was the beat, like to kind of understand the rhythm of it. And to, not talk at some points, and it slowed me down in terms of how fast I was speaking and things like that.
Yeah.
So timing's a lot of it, though, isn't it?
Right. Now, I don't know if you had this experience, but going through when the people were going through their jokes, they'd say it at a certain speed, and he'd like just pause right there and then say that word, and all of a sudden it's funny,
yeah.
Whereas it wasn't funny before.
Yeah, you had all these little tricks like that. Yeah. You'd be like, what's he talking mm-hmm. about? But when you did it,
right.
it worked, and mm-hmm. it was like, wow, okay, he's the pro, you know?
How can our listeners learn more about Nebo, get in touch with you, have a substantive conversation on some of these topics?
Yeah, the easiest way is to go to our website, www.neboagency.com, and I can also be reached by email, khowarth, that's khowarth at neboagency.com. That's probably the best way to reach me.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you in the studio this afternoon, man.
Well,
thank
you.
Well, we'll have to have you back, but before we do, we're going to visit with some other two gentlemen. Can you hang out with us while we do that?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Mr. Jared Milan and TJ Muehlman. How did I do on the names, guys?
That was perfect.
Perfect.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't perfect.
It wasn't perfect?
They just said that.
My name was... was well said.
There you go.
If you can get Muehlman right, you can get anything right.
There you go. All right. Well, gentlemen, give us a little bit of a feel for it's We & Co.
We & Co, yes.
We & Co, yeah. So you guys are a relatively new outfit. What are you guys out there doing?
Yeah, we're new to the space. We're here in Atlanta. We are a place for people who want to connect and recognize their favorite service or server, barista, bartender, whoever it is that you rely on day to day.
And think of it as being similar to Foursquare. Foursquare lets you check into a place. We & Co. lets you thank the people who work at those places. So it's a people layer on top of Foursquare.
Well, that sounds like fun. I mean, I would like to come back behind the Starbucks. I go to you see the coffee I'm drinking. I go to the Starbucks or the Caribou. If you know their name, I'd love to come back and tell them something nice.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole point. I mean, it's a whole segment of the society. It's roughly 30 to 50 million people who are unrecognized. They do a great job every day, but we never write anything kind about the people who work there. We always write something about the place. And the kind of quick little thing I like to say is a place is four walls and a door. It's the people that make a place great.
And We & Co. gives you that experience of being a regular. So when you go to a place, the people know you and they know what to recommend for you. And it really just gives you a better experience every time you go into that.
So can you walk us through kind of the experience? So like I go into my favorite coffee shop, now what?
Yeah, certainly. So you open up the app and you're going to see all of the places around you. That's Foursquare data that we're building on top of. You can then go into that place and see if the person's already on our system. If they are, it's a very simple thank process.
If the server is there?
Exactly. Uh-huh. If they're not there, you can easily add them. So just add their name, their title, their gender. Once you've done that, you can thank them. Share that with your friends on Facebook and Twitter. And now there's a digital connection between you and them.
So now it says, like, I'm at Caribou Coffee at this address, and my server is TJ, right? Is that and so that'll pop up on my screen now?
Exactly. So in your newsfeed on Facebook
right.
or your Twitter stream on Twitter. So.
And that shows up and it's like, wow, you did a great job? Or like, what do you get out of that?
Yeah, so it's kind of a two-pronged approach. As the user, the person doing the thanking, I get to establish a connection with these people.
Right.
Now I know who they are. It's a little black book. I use it for like when I go get my haircut. I can never remember my stylist's name. So now with We & Co., I pull it up. I'm like, oh, I thanked her last time. Now I remember her name. I see her picture. I see what I thanked
right.
her for. And then for the service pro, it's recognition. It's that recognition from their favorite loyal patrons that they've never been able to get. And the cool thing is that it's memorialized. It's on our website. It's a link. It's like LinkedIn for the service sector. So they can now have a little webpage that they can go and they can see all the people that have thanked them. They can fill out more information about themselves, maybe what their favorite food is at the restaurant they work at or their favorite drink, and really build out a profile that they can share with their patrons.
So that's your norm everywhere you go. Like, you guys are old enough to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No.
We always use that picture when we're right. sharing the idea with different people.
Well, I like the idea, like let's say that I'm the manager at the Caribou. I like the idea of having the web screen up behind me
mm-hmm.
that shows all the nice comments of my staff. Is that an app? Is that one way that people use it, you think?
It could be. We don't have any screens mm-hmm. up behind the counter, but we would love to see that.
That would be cool.
And it's kind of like, think of it like Yelp. Every place that has thank yous in our system has their own little webpage out on weand.co. And you see all the people who have thanked and all the nice things they've said. But the difference is that unlike Yelp, we're only positive. So there are no negative comments in the system. And so that is a bonus to the business. Obviously, positive comments are things they want to see. And with social media being the way it is, if you can have one person say something nice and it gets shared with their 300 followers and then they retweet it and so on and so forth, you're now reaching a potential audience of tens of thousands of people that really can see this positive experience.
So how do you keep it positive? I mean, is it monitored or something? Or what?
Yeah, we're very clear that we only want positive content. So if somebody were to write something negative, we would delete that thing. That's never actually happened. So
yeah, interestingly enough, we've been out soft launch for about 7 months, and we have yet to have to edit a negative post. We've had to maybe edit a couple of posts that people may have put in when they've had a few too many beers to drink. but those were funny, and we're like, oh, that's cute, but we should edit that. So
we don't edit here. You can say whatever you want.
All right, perfect.
Now, I would think that the content becomes like a resume for the server.
Exactly.
Has that ever happened where they were able to go, look, I can now go to a better restaurant or a better place because look at how awesome I am?
We see that being something in the future. It's not something we're aware of yet. The businesses that we are working with would probably be a little bit angry if they saw their people leaving.
Or just go, I think I need a raise,
Yeah. The cool thing, and you're spot on. I mean, a lot of these are more active servers, and service professionals have literally well over 100 thank yous from dozens of unique people. So this is their loyal contact list that previously you never saw. And again, when you're talking about 30 to 50 million service professionals, they're the frontline retail folks that control literally hundreds of billions of dollars of commerce every day, and we don't know anything about them. And WeInco is attempting to solve that problem by establishing a communication loop between the patron, the service pro, and the business.
Yeah, we haven't actually discussed that communication loop, but the service pro can actually reach out to me and say, come on in tonight, I haven't seen you for a while. And so it really is driving that experience of being the norm in a place.
Okay, show me the money. How's this thing making money? How's it designed to make money?
So we kind of have three major revenue streams that we're going after. The first is brands. We see ourselves being able to create custom campaigns for these brands to allow them to recognize the positive things that are happening within their business, but also to incentivize and manage their employees. The next piece is working with businesses, allowing them to reach out to these people or thanking these loyal customers, as well as continue to manage and incentivize their employees. And then the last piece is recruitment. So we do see ourselves as becoming the LinkedIn for service pros, where the business owner who needs his next bartender can actually get qualified leads of these are top bartenders who their patrons really respect what they do. And that bartender or that business owner no longer has to go to something like Craigslist and get hundreds of resumes that are no good. He can see 5 to 10 really qualified bartenders that he could hire.
So you guys looking for money? You got plenty of money. Where are you in this funding stuff?
We are definitely fundraising right now. We're about halfway through a seed raise and hoping to close it here soon so we can provide all of our attention to running the company. So, yeah, about halfway out there. So if there's any investors out there, we'd love to talk to you.
Well, part of the reason I'm asking is we are looking at launching a startup-oriented show. And so I'm trying to get a feel for – we're trying to learn more about the community and what we can do to help people out like you guys, let folks know that you're trying to raise money.
Yeah, the community here, as was previously mentioned, has done a lot. I mean, I've been in the startup community in Atlanta for about 13 years. And it's come a long way. The ATDC has done phenomenal things. Flashpoint just came online. I think their first class graduated a few months ago and have done really great things for the startup community. And I think what Atlanta still kind of really needs is that strong investor community that really gets working with startups. And the investor community is wonderful. And seeing younger entrepreneurs who have had successful exits putting money back into the community, I think is a really good thing for Atlanta.
And Kevin mentioned that the B2B space, Atlanta's great at it.
Right.
The B2C space, the space we're in, it's very new still, and there's not a lot of people who understand it.
And so how receptive are restaurant owners, these folks, when you're out having these conversations? Are they initially really receptive, or are they scratching their head, or are you seeing a little bit of everything?
It's very receptive. So it's a very simple story. We go in there, we say we're the anti-Groupon, we're the anti-Yelp, and people love us. As far as getting their attention and getting them to implement things, that's more of a challenge. But the idea and them wanting to be part of it is not a challenge at all.
Now, are restaurants getting frustrated with those deal places like Groupon?
Yeah, they are. The Groupon, unfortunately, those kinds of deal sites don't drive loyalty. What they do is they tend to bring a lot of folks in the door who don't spend any additional money, and they don't come back. So they kind of come in from out of nowhere. They're not loyal patrons. So it really drives these businesses crazy because they're not making any money. In fact, they're losing money. They're hemorrhaging money out of these kinds of deals. And We & Co. is attempting to solve that problem by saying, look, you have a loyal customer base, and we're going to help you maintain that loyal customer base and reward the loyal customer base and take people who may have only come in once a week and help drive them in more times a week. So that from the user perspective, you're making them feel, you know, like Norm from Cheers. You're making them feel like when you walk in, they're like, hey, it's TJ. TJ's a cool guy. He always tips well, and he's a great guy, and that's me personifying myself. But
there's so much truth to that. I get coupons for Cazadores, for the Mexican joint right down the street. I don't use them. Yeah. I'm that loyal of a customer. I don't want to use a coupon.
Yeah.
And I want to pay full fee. I mean, I think they do a great job, and that's my haunt. Yeah. I mean, I don't even use a coupon.
Yeah, and in fact, our perk program, we strongly discourage percent off. Like, we don't do a 10% off, 20% off. We do a free drink or a curated special event. You know, we work closely with a restaurant here in town, and they do a pizza making class. So that would be something we would invite people to. Something special, something unique that is different than, say, hey, 25% off up to $10. It's like, okay, that's great. But if I came in and they're like, hey, thanks for thanking me, here's a free margarita, that's meaningful.
And so are you at liberty to share a specific success story? Can we do that without compromising anyone's interest, or can we, or maybe without?
Yeah, we could share a success story. So we work with a company in town called the Iberian Pig. We did an Insider Perk program. We got a number of people in the door. Those people got a free Iberian ham tasting. Those same people spent more that evening than everybody else. So higher
per ticket, yeah, about 30% higher about.
And then they also tipped more, and so there was a lot of goodwill built out of this, but then they also made a positive ROI.
Yeah, and anecdotally, one of our favorite stories to tell is we go out to San Francisco, and we went out in the fall. We went to a restaurant. The server was named Pedro, took really good care of us, and we showed him, like, hey, Pedro, we're going to thank you on We & Co. You know, you did a really great job, and share it on Twitter and Facebook. Well, we went there the next day, accidentally, and Pedro was there, and he's like, TJ and Jared, he remembered exactly who we were. He remembered what drinks we had, and in fact gave me free mimosas the whole morning. So, it was a positive experience, and that I can't tell you how many times that happens, and it's not when I tell people I'm the co-founder of We & Co. I just say, I'm thanking you on this new cool app, and try to play an anonymous guy, and right. Every time people, it just makes their day. They're recognized, and they'd never been previously recognized in the way that we're kind of offering this.
And long-term vision after Lee and Kevin here stroke you a couple checks, what's this thing going to look like 2, 3, 4 years out?
So if you think what Foursquare has been able to do with places, we want to do the same thing with people. So we want to create this very rich data set around the service professional, give them a voice, and then allow all sorts of other services to come in and build really cool apps and websites off of the data that we've created.
So can we invite Kevin back into the conversation for a minute?
Absolutely.
So I didn't ask if specific industries really lent themselves to this interactive marketing, but I will ask, does this kind of thing lend itself to interactive marketing? Is that a viable approach for this kind of thing in your view, or do you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and especially the way you guys are building it up is just it's very smart. It's kind of looking at it from the, because number one, I mean, you definitely have like that audience where they're, and it sort of comes on both sides. I mean, like you said, it's this unrecognized audience on one side, and the people that go to these people every day. So you got two sides there. So And I think, too, what kind of interests me, I guess, from a content perspective in thinking of that is that as it builds and builds and builds, there's always more you can do with it. There's always more, like, you know, I mean, you can have additional content that might be helpful for these servers and baristas. It might be additional content might be helpful about, the people, just things that might help with that recognition element, stuff like that. So it just sounds like something that can be very scalable and kind of grow and grow and grow and kind of get very interesting. But it's got a good start because it's got that connection there, I think, and that's always something good. People are interested in using it. You're already almost like halfway there. The rest is just kind of how do you build on that and grow that out. So
And the cool thing is, we've worked with a couple different agencies here in town, and the overwhelming kind of response from them is this is great. Brands and businesses are dying for positive experiences to be shared online, because by and large, if you go to Twitter and Yelp and all these other ones, you see mostly negative experiences. And these social media outlets have done a great job in kind of getting turnaround times on issues resolved more quickly. But the ability to say we're only positive and this is a positive experience with a person, it really kind of brings value to brands and businesses. And so, we've had good conversations with marketing agencies and ad agencies on those lines.
And cool. we've been playing around with pushing content into a business's Facebook page, allowing them to have this user-generated content that they own and can share with their audience.
So, and Kevin mentioned the word scalable. That's the kind of word that the Lee Cantors and the Damon Johns of the world, that's what they want to hear,
that's
right?
That's it. Got to be able to
is
scale.
Is that what you and Damon talk about when you all visit over the weekend?
If it isn't scaling, we're bailing.
I like that. Well, as long as we still have you in the conversation, I wonder what advice, if any, you might have for these guys, because you've been deeply involved and at other times on the periphery of a lot of startup activity. Any counsel you would have to offer these guys in their path?
Oh, man. Obviously, you guys are just doing a startup is enough. It's like I'm not worthy, in that sense. I've never started a company. I've never been an entrepreneur. But seeing kind of like how this has kind of worked for a lot of other people over the years, I guess my only advice, but I'm sure you're doing this anyway, is just to get more and more connected with not only this community, but other communities. It's just probably one of the best ways any startup can thrive, I think, is just by seeing who's around you, who's doing other stuff, and just kind of just get more and more ingrained, more and more ingrained, because that'll give you like your just a really good community lifeline for so many different things. Like I said, I'm sure you're already on that track anyway, but that's always what I see. Like sometimes some startups get too isolated and they kind of don't connect enough with people around them, and that's when they usually kind of just go on the fringes and don't really do anything. So.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, we're pretty active in ATDC startup drinks. Yeah. Pretty much a lot of
startup drinks. I like the sound of it. We haven't
have
done
we
that.
Missed
oh,
that.
I know.
We did Startup Riot. We did Startup Lounge.
Yeah. We missed Startup Drinks.
Anytime the word drinks is involved, you'll probably find me there.
Maybe I'll start up a company now if they're going to have some drinks.
I like
it. Drinks and
yummy interested. Yeah.
So, how can our listeners learn more about your drinking patterns or this app?
You can find me at tj@weand.co, and my Twitter handle is tjmule, and we are in the App Store. If you do a search for We and Co, you'll find us in the App Store. Download us, give it a whirl, and let me know. I run the technology side, so if you run into any problems, just shoot me an email, and I'm very quick to respond.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm jared@weand.co, so jared@weand.co. You can also find ways to connect with us through our website at wean.co.
Good stuff. Well, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest here today. We will see you all next time.